Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Willie and D-Mace continues here on 102.5 The Game, hour number two. Willie Donick here with you, along with Adam Vinken, who is guest hosting this week, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We are joined by Jonathan Hutton of Hot Mike with Hutton & Withrow for his weekly appearance on the show. Hut, what's going on?
Willie, what's up, man? Good to be on the show today, Adam. Hope everything's going well.
Adam is doing very well. Adam,
good.
Say hello to Hutton.
Hey, Jonathan, how you doing? Do you like Jonathan? Do you like Hutton? How do you like to? How do you go?
You know what? Jonathan's fine. Jonathan's totally fine. Chad and I once did this on the show. I think there's like 33 to 35 people that call me Jonathan in my life. Most people call me Hutton, and there are three people that call me John. And that's it. I want to keep it at three. Doug Matthews, one of them, Willie.
That's good. I remember that now that I think about it. I didn't know he was one of three. I won't even ask who the other two are.
The other two are farmers in Morrison, Tennessee. Shout out Mike Bolden.
Okay, good. We learn something about Hutton each week. So, first, let me get your quick thought on Tennessee winning the national title, where it goes from here. I think you're aware of it, right? There is a great rivalry already between Vanderbilt and Tennessee baseball that goes way, way back decades.
Yes.
But has really heated up since Tony Vitello came in and resurrected the program, which was down for a decade plus, right, before he got there. And so you have a lot of people comparing what he's done in the last 4 years or so to what Tim Corbin has done over, 20 years. Basically, it took him maybe 2 or 3 years to really get things up and running. But, Tim Corbin's getting close to two decades of consistent excellence. So it's an interesting comparison. And so that's where I kind of start the discussion is, are we comparing the last 4 or 5 years since COVID? Or are we comparing, the overall arc of what each guy's accomplished? Because Tim Corbin's done it for a lot longer.
Oh, yeah. And the accomplishments are there for Corbin, right? But, hey, Willie, what – The personal rivalry between the two, you're going to know this way better than me. It's there, is it not?
Yeah, I think so. And I
do too.
And yeah, I really was interested. He didn't mention Tim Corbin by name, but he was talking about his peers in the SEC. He goes, I respect them a lot more than they know. And that was an interesting way of putting it, because I think he's aware that, when you make noise and do things the way they've done it, it's going to rub people the wrong way.
No doubt. And not just at Vandy, right? Not just with Forbes. But in the 6 years to win a title, it really should have been 4 years. If you think about the team they had a couple of years ago, the way he came in and transformed the program and got the energy behind it. Willie, I'll raise my hand. And Chad and I and PK, we had a discussion about whether or not Tennessee should invest millions into baseball 3 years ago. Like, give him the big raise and do it. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at the profitable sports, and I'm thinking, well, no, not if you're claiming, you're trying to make ends meet, and they were going through that crazy downturn right before Heupel. And I mean, I'm looking at it going, man, this is when you think about the last national title at Tennessee for a major sport in men's athletics, I mean, it's been a while. Chant the 98 season all you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's still all about football, but I enjoy the personal rivalry that Corbin's still the dude. He's still the man. But Vitello is he's got that energy and a little cockiness, confidence mixture that makes for some explosive moments, pregame, in-game, postgame. And he relates to these players now. He's getting the guy. And I think you look back on a season like this one, Willie, And I talking with Chad and Withrow agrees. I think about the Vandy players in Major League Baseball, and I relate whenever I see them to the seasons that they were a part of. I want to see the Tennessee players do that in the majors, because then that will be the historic nature of individual name linking them to Tennessee and seeing where Tony V can take them.
And I would say, look, the last 4 years or so, 2021 through 2024, the post-COVID, right? 2020 is a different deal because the season wasn't played. So it's easy to kind of say this is what's happened since then.
But it was also, Tennessee gave a damn about baseball all of a sudden.
And that is huge for their culture. But if you're comparing the two programs, you can't, I don't think you can really argue that in the last 4 years, Tennessee with a national title and the teams they've had the last 4 years post-COVID.
No doubt.
They are the premier program going right now. And as Tony Vitello said himself, this is survival. In this league, it's survival. Sometimes you're going to get them. Sometimes they get you. That's just what playing in the SEC is all about. Every coach has their own way of saying that when you have LSU, and now you have Texas and Oklahoma, and you've got Alabama and Georgia, and on down the line. Unbelievable teams coming to the table every year. But let's just define the, quote, downturn of Vanderbilt's baseball program the last 4 years. 2021, one game away from a national title, lost to Mississippi State.
Mississippi State.
They also, 2023, they lost in the regional, but they won the SEC tournament. They were a top eight national seed. So they were poor, you know, they had the pathway to play at Hawkins Field to get to Omaha, and they lost. This year was, I think, probably their poorest year, but still, you know, they were comfortably in the tournament. But it was for the first time that they had to actually work to get in. And so that's why I think everybody's looking at it as, hey, is Vanderbilt on the downturn? I do think, as I look at the activity I'm seeing from them in the transfer portal, they're now getting, I think Tim Corbin is realizing he has to sort of get with the trend, and he's got to, even though he's reluctant to do it, get into the portal and sell what Vanderbilt can sell. And I think you're starting to see him get some transfers mixed in with what he really wants to build as the foundation of high school recruits and nationally top recruiting classes. So I'm really curious to see where it goes from here with the two programs, because as we know, Hutt, in every sport, sustainability is so tricky, because when you go into the portal, you might only have a lot of your players for 1 or 2 years before they're going to move on one way or the other.
And all great points. You mentioned COVID. I'll say collective. Tennessee was on the forefront, same time frame we're talking about here. Vitello jumped in head first. Heupel's done that too. They had Spire Sports Group behind them. Vandy's lagged behind in that area. There's no doubt about it.
And now catching up.
That plays a factor in everything. I think it's more about collective, honestly, even though COVID plays a factor, yes, but it's the consistency. And I will say, you know, for this to be a downturn for Vandy baseball, what a brand that Corbin has, you know, with the you're still getting the postseason, and it's viewed as like, the Patriots not making it to the AFC Championship game.
Hutton, I want to keep it in college baseball for a second. On the other side of the diamond in the championship series, Texas A&M, their coach, Jim Schlossnagel, who claimed he would never leave Texas A&M, defected to their biggest rival, taking the job at Texas. And Willie and I were talking about this at the beginning of the show, thinking about, can we think of another instance of a coach leaving one program for its most hated rival, whether in college or the pros? As I was talking just now, I thought of one but realized it didn't count. I thought about Nick Saban at LSU going to Alabama, but there were the gap years in the NFL in between, so that doesn't count. But can you think of another coach who, I guess we're going to call it pulling a Schlossnagel? Is that what we should call it from now on?
Judas Iscariot is what you could say. I mean, if not for Richard Zane from Texas, who asked that question with about 30 seconds left of the press conference, he would have been, I think it would be scot-free, because he wouldn't have the reaction that went public, going after the reporter. So props to Richard for asking that question. He was destroyed by Texas A&M fans for asking the question about their beloved coach. who then pulls the juice. I mean, in terms of betrayals in the state of Texas, I'm thinking of Buddy Ryan. I'm trying to go through some of the others with the Oilers. Like, I mean, this has got to go down as one of the most bitter ones, just based on the programs involved and the way it's all gone down with his statement. And it's just so there's at some point integrity has to play a factor somewhere. And I didn't see very much of it there where he made it about him in the presser. Now, you know, let's see. I mean, in terms of the true rival, I mean, by the way, I have a prediction. I think Dion is going to be the head coach of the Florida Gators. So maybe I'm predicting one. because he doesn't claim Florida State all of a sudden with the Seminoles because of this was a couple years ago. But he, because of the way they handled his interview or didn't interview him for a job, whatever.
Huh. But you know what? What also sets this apart, Hutt, to me is it's not as if Texas A&M was a truly inferior program.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a program that has been on top the last couple. They have a great crowd, a great following. Now, certainly not the legacy of the Texas program. Nothing close to that year in, year out. But it's not like he. You know, this was a little brother kind of thing. Like, they're almost on top of the mountain. They're as close to being on top of the mountain as you can be, and he goes across to do this. That is unique.
And then says what he said in the final answer of the presser at the national championship. You know, like the College World Series, he's asked directly. It was a layup question, and it's not a bad question to ask this. Because Richard got the response about the rumor mill that Schlossnagel was involved in, and he just went off on the guy, saying that, you know, I left TCU and left my family. I mean, it's just bizarre that within hours, not even a full 24-hour period, he was doing the exact thing that he was criticizing the reporter for even bringing up. Thank goodness he asked it, because, again, he left TCU under the midnight hour. And it really wasn't much of a story the way he went out. But he was there for, 18 years? He was there for a long time.
Yeah, it's another reason to really...
And the whole Texas A&M, the Texas and Texas A&M rival, this is, it's gold. It feels like the SEC of 15 years ago, you know? And it's in college baseball, which makes it even better.
I think he had to have set the record for shortest freezing cold take of all time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
To say
but
what
how
he
do you
said
do
about-
that just as a person, as an individual, do that to the reporter when you know at that moment you're bolting?
Do you think he left the podium and signed the contract? Do you think he walked out of that room and just put pen to paper right then and there?
Even if you don't, even if you don't like the question, you know you're going to look like an idiot literally hours after saying what he said. I don't see much common sense there from him.
Hutt, one thing as we let you go here, one thing we're going to discuss going forward, I think it's going to be an interesting storyline for the Titans this coming season for L'Jarius Sneed. He is obviously a guy that has become a great player, that everything timed up right. He's got a big contract. He's part of a big trade. He comes to a team that doesn't have a stacked roster like the one he just left and a championship, two championships with the Chiefs. But now he's the high-paid guy on a new team. That's a different phase of his career. And I think that's a really unique situation to be in as a player when the expectations and the spotlight is on you more. How do you think he's going to be able to handle that? Because I don't think it'll be easy.
Man, in the big moments, Willie, he's played big for the Chiefs. So I think the guys that ball and that attack the game the way that he did in KC, I think that translates even if you get paid. I mean, he got paid to be the top corner because he's one of those guys. It didn't get paid, and then all of a sudden he's got to pretend to be in that pay scale. So I feel better about that angle of it. The injury is more of a factor, which we don't know. The only thing we do know is that the back-to-back world champs let him go for, you know, lunch money. So I'm intrigued by that and the whole trade process. Titans signed off on it. And this is a new regime, but we have seen free agency, maybe a trade here or there, draft. They have signed off on guys that are coming off an injury that have not fared well. So that I'm hesitant to just go all in and say he's going to be fine. I'm maybe he is, but I think we look more back on the injury aspect than we do whether or not this dude is legit. Because I think the way he attacks the process is one with as a professional. He's very quiet, speaks up when he needs to, but players in KC said he doesn't really talk all that much. In fact, most players thought he was ignoring them sometimes in the locker room. To me, that's the silent assassin, and you need that on the island where he's playing.
Yeah, and I think he'll probably be interviewed more as a member of the Titans the role he's going to be playing.
There's just more
that goes with it, right? When you start,
when
you are making a bigger percentage of the cap,
and you know this is, exactly. And it's not, I don't have the same feel that I did, 10 years ago, whenever they flipped the secondary and they had McCourty in there, but they also brought in like Nick Harper and a few. This is a totally different approach. They're taking the money away from safety and Kevin Byard and giving it to the outside at corner. So this is their anointed guy. And on the opposite side, you have another legit outside corner. And now you have McCreary who can play his position of the inside at the slot. It's a nice setup if they're healthy. And that's why I've been saying for weeks, they're another offseason away from being NFL caliber depth. Because if they lose a guy or two in the secondary, they're back to where they were at the end of the season.
Hutt, great stuff. As always, awesome to catch up. We'll talk again next week.
Yep, I always look forward to this. Thank you, guys.
All right, sounds good. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. We'll be all reunited next week with Derek Mason back in the fold. And so we'll take it to the break. When we come back, I want to build on just the broader theme of going from sort of the unknown, underappreciated guy that earns the big contract, and then how you handle yourself many times in a different market as the guy in the spotlight that has higher expectations, because it doesn't always go well. And I'm not saying that's going to be the case with Snead. But he is going to be in a different phase of his career. We're going to discuss it a little further when we come back. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace. And if you've got examples of that from the past, we'd love to hear from you. Who are examples of people whose career takes a big turn because all of a sudden they get paid the big contract? I think of Seth Jones. I think of Darnell Nurse in hockey, where all of a sudden you almost go from being, hey, great job, you earned this great contract, to not long after, hey, this guy's overpaid and they're not winning as much. He's not on as good a team. What's going on here? You kind of take a rap that is sort of, it's not your fault that you signed that contract, but your career can go different ways. 615-737-1025 is our number. Don't miss out on Nashville's best deal for Deacon's New South in downtown Nashville, where Southern Service meets exceptional service. Their dry-aged steaks and chef-inspired dishes are complemented by inventive sides and desserts featuring locally sourced produce. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals to get a $50 gift card for only $25 while supplies last. We're back after this.
How about top five corners?
There's a lot of good corners.
There's a lot of good corners.
I think Snead, I think he's like that. McDuffin, he's a baller. Jalen Johnson from the Bears, I think he's a dog. Sertan's like that. That's already a known. Sertan, and I'll probably throw me in there, obviously.
Obviously, of course.
That was the Pittsburgh Steelers' Joey Porter Jr. talking about his list of the top five corners in the NFL, including new Titans corner, Legarius Snead, back here on Willie and D-Mace, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We just talked to Jonathan Hutton about the pressure that could perhaps be on Legarius Snead now that he has gotten his first big money contract from the Tennessee Titans. Of course, started his career with the Kansas City Chiefs, completed his rookie contract. They tagged him before trading him, and the Titans signed him to a big deal upon that. So, Willie, you were talking about players who have gone from the underpaid, underrated category to the overpaid albatross category. And look, a player's contract changes the perception of a player, whether that player likes it or not. even if you earned that contract, because look, you had to earn the contract. You had to be good enough as a player in your sport to earn the type of contract that the team ultimately gave you. But with that comes heightened expectations. And it'll be interesting to see how L'Jarius Sneed handles those expectations, because he is a great player. But there's going to be a lot more of a spotlight on him on a new team where he is going to be asked to make plays that are commensurate with the money he's making.
He's going to be held to a standard that is up to the contract, and that is a different stage of a career. Now, you can say, well, hey, this happens to all the star players. And the star players are worth every penny they're paid, right? Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes obviously is a big reason why the Chiefs have to make decisions like this and pass on some of their really good players like Sneed. And that is a little bit of my question with Sneed. I suspect that he will fall into a category of a very, very good player who, through no fault of his own, just the timing of when his deal comes up, becomes one of the highest paid players, but may not necessarily be a superstar. And this would put him with a group of a ton of players that I think of, like Bobby Bonilla from my Mets years and years ago. I remember 1992. They took him from the Pirates, who had been kicking the Mets' butt for a couple years. You can't beat him, join him. They signed him to one of the richest deals at the time in Major League Baseball, and he never lived up to that in his hometown of New York. He was a good player, but he was never a superstar. He was a good player for a long time, but he was treated as if he were supposed to be a superstar from the day he walked in there. What about Albert Haynesworth when he left? He's talked about this on the air. Chase just walked in here and reminded us of this. Albert Haynesworth for 2 years was one of the, or maybe the, most dominant defensive player in the game in 07 and 08. They let him go to free agency. He became a guy that was paid a giant amount of money, and he didn't handle it very well. He didn't play very well. He failed the conditioning test right off the bat. So he started off on the wrong foot, and it never got better when he was playing for Washington at the time. So this is what I'm wondering happens with Sneed, because it takes a special player, I think, to be able to handle that kind of spotlight, because you know you're going to be in the spotlight more, and if you're not playing well, there's going to be a lot of noise of, hey, we paid all this money for this guy, why isn't he playing real well, or why is he hurt, or something like that. And I don't know what's going to unfold with Sneed, but I do see a lot of examples of a guy gets a label through no fault of his own for being, quote, overpaid.
Let me give you some context into how good L'Jarius Sneed was during the regular season last year. This is according to NFL's Next Gen Stats. L'Jarius Sneed did not allow a single touchdown across 90 targets as the nearest defender during the regular season last year. And he allowed a receiver to gain more than 40 yards just once, and that was Devontae Adams. So if the season starts and L'Jarius Sneed gives up a couple touchdowns as
right.
the nearest
defender.
You
can defender, see the tweets. The tweets are going to come flying.
This tweet I'm reading from is going to be quote tweeted and say he's given up one touchdown on two targets or something like that. So, I mean, he set himself up to be paid this much. No one is arguing with the fact that he deserves this type of money. But the pressure is on. One player that came to mind for me, and I go to the NBA where I think a lot of these contracts exist, is Bradley Beal. You know, Bradley Beal broke into the NBA with the Washington Wizards. He was the Robin to John Wall's Batman. But when Wall's career, you know, fell apart because of injury, Beal became the alpha dog for the Wizards. And he scored a ton of points. I think he averaged 30 points in one season. He was in that mid to high 20s, low 30s for a couple of seasons as one of the top scorers per game in the NBA. He signs a 5-year, $251 million contract. And an interesting part about that contract, he had a no-trade clause, which at the time, he was the only current player with a no-trade clause. Now, we talk about in the NHL, these things are handed out like candy. That doesn't happen in the NBA. So that's how Bradley Beal was able to, you know, orchestrate a trade to the Phoenix Suns when the Wizards were rebuilding, and he went to the Suns and he formed a big three with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, which has not worked out.
Yeah.
And Beal, I remember when he signed that contract, I was like, I know he scores a lot of points, but is he worth this much money? And clearly it hasn't happened. It hasn't helped. The Suns have not done much winning. Well, actually, he would have been on them when they went to the finals a few years ago. Wouldn't have yet? So they did get there. They didn't win, if I'm not mistaken.
But not with the Wizards, though.
No, with the Suns. Yeah. Like after being traded to the Suns, I think he went to the NBA finals. So maybe he got them to a championship round, but he hasn't won them a
title. The point is, and I remember Bradley Beal well at Florida.
Yes.
A very good player, but gets paid superstar money. And all of a sudden, it becomes a weight on that player. It's a label. Darnell Nurse would be an example, especially in a salary cap where if you're trying to win, you don't want a whole lot of contracts on your books of guys that are getting paid more. And it wasn't Darnell Nurse's fault that he became a free agent or was about to become a free agent right as Seth Jones signed a huge contract. And so the market was such where he earns a big deal. I think Snead was in that position, right? He knew that the Chiefs didn't have enough money to pay him what he was going to be worth on the open market. The Titans took advantage, and they got him without giving up a lot of draft capital, right? Just the third-round pick. And they made him one of the higher-paid players at his position. The NFL has got a ton of guys like this, but now there's probably higher expectations. There's going to be more of a scrutiny, as you just pointed out, a possible scenario. And I think you've got to be very mentally tough to be able to shoulder that weight, especially through the tough times. Because not every Sunday is going to go perfect, especially for a defensive back, right? Some people blame a defensive back for a touchdown or a big play that's made that isn't even that guy's fault because people don't realize what the coverage was supposed to be, for example.
To clarify, Bradley Beal was not on the Suns when they went to the NBA Finals when they lost to the Bucks. That was before. He was on the Suns this year when they were swept out of the first round of the playoffs.
Okay.
So he has not lived up to that gargantuan contract. So he was the first player that came to mind. But, you know, anytime a player moves up multiple tax brackets, the pressure is on. That's just the way it is.
Here's a question I would add, and I don't know what my answer would be. But so I'll ask you, how many athletes, if you ask them 10 years, 15 years after their playing career is over, if you could have made a little less money and been more of the
underrated,
overperforming your contract, beloved by the fans because of it, how much money would that be worth rather than having the weight of the this guy's being paid to be a star, and he's not a star. How much money would that be worth? Or would you sit there down the road and say, you know what? I got the money either way. It was worth it.
That is a good question.
I don't know how athletes would answer that retrospectively.
Well, how many more years are the Mets paying Bobby Bonilla?
Bobby Bonilla Day is coming up just in a couple of days, as a matter of fact.
July
1st is Bobby Bonilla Day. That's Monday.
I think they have to be almost done, right?
Oh, no. We're nowhere close to being done. Are you kidding me? He's got one of the greatest steals ever.
Do they have any sort of celebration for Bobby Bonilla Day?
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Look Monday. You'll see many, many memes, tweets, everything celebrating Bobby Bonilla Day.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think about a player on the opposite side, a player who overperformed his previous contract, had added surplus value to his team on his contract and then got that big contract and continued to play well, is Nathan MacKinnon. You know, Nathan MacKinnon was making like $6.3 million for a while when he was really first starting to come up and become the perennial MVP candidate. And I think he got sick and tired of constantly being asked, man, you don't make as much as you're probably worth, do you? And then he signed for, what, $12.5 million per season? And he continues to be one of the most impactful players in the NHL. So that's the opposite.
Yes, and Leon Draisaitl is about to go into that same phase where he might look at the MacKinnon contract as sort of a marker as the cap rises, and he's about to get paid the superstar money. Now, for a true superstar, those guys end up being worth every penny anyway. So it's really a moot point for them. But there's probably a bigger chunk of people, and you don't know it at the time, although I think sometimes GMs know, look, I'm probably paying more than this guy's worth, but this is what it takes in the market as we sit here today to go get this guy. I don't doubt that next Monday, on the free agent market. This is a year where it's a good year to be a free agent. And there's going to be some guys who end up getting overpaid. And even the GMs would probably say, you know what, this is probably too much, but this is, I've got to have this guy. I've got to fill this hole in my team. And so you spend a little extra to get it, and you hope for the best.
Right. Like last year, I remember when the Predators signed Ryan O'Reilly, I thought the cap hit was fair. I thought $4.5 million per season for Ryan O'Reilly at that point of his career was a fair number. I thought they gave him too much term. I was like, I would have given him maybe 2 or 3 years, not four. You know, so sometimes it's the length of the contract versus the money. But you're right. Come free agency on Monday. I mean, part of the fun of NHL free agency or free agency in general is seeing which teams sign instantly regrettable contracts, because it's going to happen. There are contracts that are signed on the first day of free agency that you know almost immediately are like, man, that is not going to age well.
Yeah.
And you know, there are two players that come to mind, one that we sort of have talked about for the Predators. I think Nikita Zadorov is a prime candidate to be overpaid because he had a good postseason and he has a lot of things that GMs go gaga over. He's 6'6", he's 250 pounds, he hits people. Like, people in the NHL still value that, and there is value in it, but Nikita Zadorov is going to be paid like a, I think, like a top pairing blue liner when he's probably really a third pairing blue liner. And, you know, that's just what happens on free agency day. You kind of, you know, you lose all sight of the big picture when you're just throwing money at people.
I want to make clear that I don't know if Snead is going to fall into this category. I just know that the great players are very rare. And I don't know enough about Snead to know if he's going to be able to live up to this contract. And it's not his fault. That's the thing. You can't blame the player. You should probably be more mad at the GM. But the player is the one that shoulders the load of this burden. So I want to, maybe some callers, some texters can help us with other examples that you can think of players that earned a big contract and then went through some stress. And I think some people have admitted over the years that it probably affected the way they play. It shouldn't, right? But how about Fernando Tatis Jr. making enormous dollars for San Diego? The Padres aren't a huge spending team. They're not the Dodgers. They put big money down on him. Got suspended. Hasn't lived up to it. He hasn't played like a superstar since he signed that deal. It's leaving the fans wanting more. That's tough, right? But he earned that contract, and it's guaranteed whether he hits one more home run in his career or 100 more home runs, whatever it is.
I do have another one for you in Major League Baseball. Anthony Rendon.
There's a great example. Has not been able to stay
great
healthy
for the Washington
all.
Nationals. Yeah. Helped them win the World Series. Has not been able to stay healthy with the Angels at all.
And he's become kind of bitter, too. When you see him in interviews, remember he had the issue with the fan and stuff. It becomes a tough burden.
Yes,
following him around.
It appears that it hurt his career. And by the way, Bobby Bonilla Day is until July 1st, 2035.
We got so plenty of Bobby Bonilla Days coming.
More than 10 years left of Bobby Bonilla Days to come.
615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in our call or text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Yes, please let us know what you think. We've got another text from Hair Metal Henry. We mentioned Albert Haynesworth. He mentioned Albert Haynesworth as well. If you have any other examples, please let us know on our phone and text line. William D. Mace, ESPN 1025-1063, The Game. William D. Mace on ESPN 1025-1063, The Game. Adam Bingen in for Derek Mason. Willie Donick. We're talking about players who went from underrated, underpaid darlings to overpaid, you know, what's the word I should use to describe
albatross?
It? Albatross. Albatross.
Burdens.
Whatever you want to say. You've got some responses on our text line.
Of angry fans.
Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've already mentioned a few. You said you got a few more.
Our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Some really good ones. Mark in Gallatin says, Russell Wilson. That is a great example there. Not for the length of his career, but certainly when he left the Seahawks and got traded to the Broncos, that has become a major albatross for them. And it you can tell how much it has weighed on him as he's played. Now we'll see what happens in Pittsburgh in a new phase of his career. Caleb pointed out about we were talking about the Suns and Bradley Beal. Bobby Bonilla will be 72 years old when Bobby Bonilla days officially end. And what year did you say it was, Adam? 2036?
2035.
Joel in Woodbury says, Jason Hayward with the Cubs. That's a really good one. The Braves, he was the number one prospect in baseball. Freddie Freeman had a lot less hype. Jason Hayward did very well for the Braves, ended up getting this huge contract from the Cubs, and is still getting paid very handsomely, but he is not the same player. He never turned out to be the star player that it looked like he was going to be. That's a great example. And I think Hayward is one of the few guys that's done a very good job of finding a role and not letting that define his career, but he's still sort of regarded as an overpaid disappointment. I think he handles about as well as you can, whereas I think it kind of wrecks some people.
I think quarterbacks are ripe for this sort of thing. Daniel Jones comes to mind in
New York.
That's
a really good one, especially in New York.
Especially in New York, where he's ending up on the back pages of the New York Post with, you know, mean-spirited headlines. But, you know, he had a decent year the year before he signed that contract, and then last year was just awful, and then he got hurt. And so it was just a bad year all around for Daniel Jones, but feels like that contract is instantly regrettable. But the adding on the pressure of the market, like if Daniel Jones was the starting quarterback of the
Arizona Cardinals,
I was going to say Jacksonville Jaguars, but if either of those teams, people would still probably be poking fun at him because of the contract. But when you add the New York market into the mix, that makes it much, much worse. I mean, Deshaun Watson is another one for
David has a great one
for obvious reasons.
Yes, he might be in his own category of this, but there's no doubt, despite all of the other stuff, icky stuff that happened off the field, just the weight of that contract is weighing on him now, and he's still going through it. We'll see what happens this year when it comes to it. Another one that they brought up, Adam, Rick DiPietro. Now, people may not be familiar with him, but go through what happened with him. He's another guy that hit this quickly, and I think has handled it about as well as you can handle it.
So Rick DiPietro was the number one overall pick in the 2000 NHL draft by the New York Islanders. He was drafted by, this is how far back you have to go. He was drafted by Mike Milbury. Mike Milbury was the general manager of the New York Islanders at that time. Of course, remember Mike Milbury from his time on NBC. Was it NBC Sports?
Yes.
Yes. Not a very popular figure among fans, but that's how far back you have to go. So he played his first season on a one-year, $2.5 million contract, according to Cap Friendly. The following year, Garth Snow, so not Mike Milbury, Garth Snow, the GM of the Islanders, signed Rick DiPietro to a 15-year, $67.5 million contract. He made it through 6 or 7 years of that deal before they bought him out. The buyout length, 16 years. They're paying him
16. That's almost Bobby Bonilla.
He will be paid by the Islanders $1.5 million until the end of the 2028-29 season. And the buyout started during the 2013-2014 season. So he's making $1.5 million. He's made $1.5 million from the Islanders for the past decade and will continue to do so. Now, here's the interesting thing. I believe Rick DiPietro is an analyst for MSG.
Yes.
Who broadcasts the Islanders game. Are they just pay? Is that his salary? It's like, we will pay. Like, if we're paying you $1.5 million per year, you might as well do broadcasting for us. Do you think that's. I hope they're not paying him on top of that.
I do not know. I know we've had him on our show once or twice, and he is a really engaging personality who's very well aware of the label and handles it very well. Ray and Henderson brings up James Neal, and I think you can put into this category of NHL players who are eventually bought out at different stages. It's a weight, right? It's a label.
Let's talk about Matt Duchene for a moment.
Matt Duchene is another one, right? Because it becomes a thing where you're just so there's high expectations, and there is a return on investment thing. Kyle Turris, who the Predators will pay for what, another 3 or 4 years, a couple million. Whose careers just hit a point where it's better to buy them out. But for a while, you're the overpaid guy, and it's got to be very stressful. This is, again, in the context of Legarius Sneed is now entering into this phase of his career, and we'll see how he handles himself. I hope he's able to keep an even keel. And obviously we wish him health and productivity where this never becomes an issue. And he gets into that category of absolutely worth every penny that they're investing in him. But it doesn't happen for everybody. There's a bunch of quarterbacks. Matt Flynn got mentioned by one of our texters here. That's a good one.
Yeah, former Packers backup, right?
Yes.
Got some starting time and turned it into a contract with the Seahawks. It was a three-year, $26 million contract, according to NFL.com.
Yeah. And Scott Mitchell comes to mind with the Lions, paid him a ton of money after he was Dan Marino's backup and had moments but never sustained it.
An unnamed texter mentions another NHL goaltender, Corey Schneider, who was the backup to Roberto Luongo in Vancouver and was traded to New Jersey and signed a seven-year, $42 million contract and was bought out like more than halfway through. But, you know, he didn't live up to that deal. Hair Metal Henry, who also suggested Albert Haynesworth and Rick DiPietro, said Kwame Brown. Kwame Brown, was he a number one pick in the NBA draft?
I believe
by the Wizards, another Wizards-related, another Washington-related.
Calamity.
I mentioned to you during the break Gilbert Arenas as another player who signed a big contract that did not live up to those expectations. We've got a name. We've got Kyle Turris on the text line as well. I mean, it's easier to find these examples than you would think. It's harder.
Well, there's more of those guys than there are people that end up saying, wow, we made this big investment in the star and everything turned out great, which does happen plenty of times.
I used the example of Nathan MacKinnon in the last segment of someone who was underpaid, criminally underpaid, has lived, you know, has basically doubled his cap hit, doubled his yearly salary on his current contract from his previous contract and continues to be in the MVP discussion every year.
And we're hitting on ones that went, in a lot of cases, disastrous.
Right, because it's easy to remember the worst ones.
Right. There's a lot of others that continue to be very good players. And this is maybe the toughest part, right? They're the same player they were before the contract was signed, but they're just viewed differently. And in that player's mind, they're saying, you know what, I'm playing the same as I've always played, but why am I looked at so differently? Well, the salary cap number has a lot to do with that. And it's hard to sort of process all of that, I think, as a professional. And it takes a special mentally tough person to be able to put that aside and understand that part of it. You see what I'm saying? Like Darnell Nurse is still a very good player.
Right.
But he's considered, what's the first thing you think about? Oh, man, I'd love to take Darnell Nurse at $5 million and have that extra $4 million to go spend on the roster. The Oilers in hockey are about to have to make very difficult decisions on how to signed Dreisaitl and McDavid to the next contract, still have Darnell Nurse at $9.5 million, and build out the rest of your Evan Bouchard, other guys that are needing raises. These are what make it very tough, especially in a hard salary cap, at sustaining your window of opportunity. And that's why there's such a burden on Darnell Nurse, who's a good player, but was never probably worth 9.5.
And had a horrific postseason.
Yes. And of course, every time he made a mistake, that's everybody's first thing.
Right.
We're paying this guy $9.5 million?
Despite the, I mean, he is not a $9.5 million defenseman. But I also don't think he's as bad as he was in the playoffs. Like, that was extremely bad. But to your point, you know, it's finding the middle ground. Like, guys who got those big money contracts and remained decent players but didn't live up to the contract, those are harder to find than the ones we've been listing, which are the ones that flame out, you know, tremendously. Yeah. But speaking of the NHL, it was announced today, officially announced, or actually it was unveiled rather. Fanatics is revealed their new NHL jerseys, because Fanatics, which had its issues with Major League Baseball, which we'll get into, unveiled its NHL jerseys. And we're going to talk about the Fanatics of it all, because as I said, Major League Baseball, when they unveiled the new jerseys made by Nike and Fanatics, it was an absolute disaster. So did Fanatics learn its lesson based on what happened in Major League Baseball? We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan in for Derek Mason. Willie Donahue on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.